Do exorcisms intrigue you? Do you like scary urban legends? Are you fascinated with history and ghostly lore of haunted places? Well, if you answered yes to any of these, please check out Hauntingly Yours, a podcast for the paranormal. I'm your host, DC O'Rourke. I invite you to get together with me and the rest of our para family each and every week to hear haunting tales from across the globe. The show is available on all podcast players. Please do not forget to review and subscribe.
On the show today, I have Kathleen Rydell Tetson. Kat is a writer, a published author on the paranormal and unexplained, an investigator and historical researcher. Welcome to the show, Kat.
Thanks for having me, Al. Good to be here.
I see in 2006, you started your journey in the paranormal, correct?
Correct, yes. Paranormal, not that I didn't like a good scary movie, because I love those, but, you know, believing in ghosts or not really wasn't a part of my world at that point. And I went to a dinner with my husband and my sister at a wonderful restaurant called The Whitney in Detroit. And back then, The Whitney wasn't known as being haunted. It was just this five-star restaurant in this beautiful mansion. And after dinner, we kind of walked around this incredible home, and my sister was taking pictures. And the next day, we kind of looked at her pictures, and we saw this one that was very strange. And it looked like this tornado on its side coming around the corner of the elevator on the second floor. I sent that photo out to an acquaintance of mine who was a forensic photographer who worked for the FBI contractor. And I thought, oh, he'll be able to tell us what it is. And at first he thought it was dust, which I thought was ridiculous because it didn't look anything like dust. And he introduced me to the fact that dust can look like a lot of weird stuff in photographs. But after he analyzed it, he figured out it's not, I don't think it's dust. And he did not know what it was. That got me curious. And we connected with a paranormal team back then called Highland Ghost Hunters. And for about a 1 year period, we investigated the Whitney. Just out of curiosity, to be honest. I mean, my sister Bev and I had been authoring books on Michigan for a long time. Nothing to do with the paranormal, about travel and stuff like that. I had my first paranormal experience at the Whitney, which blew me away. We recorded our first EVPs at the Whitney, and it went from there. And our journey continued.
When you say you started out with, was that with your husband and your sister? You did it as like a team or?
No, it was mostly my sister and I. My husband was really involved in finance, you know, his work, and wasn't that much into paranormal stuff. So it was pretty much my sister and I, and then Highland Ghost Hunters. And we worked with many other teams after that, too. And not that my husband didn't believe, he supported us, but he had his work to do. So my sister and I.
I see you're from Michigan, and many of your books are referenced to the state as well.
Right.
Anything outside of Michigan, or are you just in that area?
I have. My sister and I traveled across the U.S. We've been from Philadelphia all the way down to Louisiana, investigating some of America's most haunted. Well, supposedly most haunted. But our primary focus for the book project was Michigan, and we did over 350 investigations. I stopped count at 350 just in Michigan. It wasn't unusual for us to drive 10,000 miles a year just in Michigan investigating. So it kind of became, it wasn't a hobby, it became a full-time commitment.
In your writing process, is it hard to separate folklore from fact?
Yes, that was the purpose of our book. You know, there are so many urban legends, and our goal was to debunk, disprove the urban legends, and find the real historical facts behind what was going on. And it would sometimes take us months of research just on one story to get the true historical facts. And what we found out is that the urban legends sometimes had an element of truth, but were mostly just stories, and that the actual history is sometimes more interesting than the legend. So,
And sometimes those stories grow over time. You know what I'm saying?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's like sitting around a campfire and you say something, sometimes it comes back around. Yes. It's completely.
Yes. Yeah. That's so true.
During an investigation, have you ever come across anything demonic?
There was a story in the second Haunted Travels of Michigan book, the second one, called The Holly Demon. And I'm not sure if it was a demon, but I didn't believe in demons. But some really unusual things happened during that investigation that blew me away. And, you know, it took place in a town in Michigan called Holly, Michigan. And a woman who owned an antique store with her husband at the time. And the minute she married him and she moved into his house and started working at the antique shop, weird things started to happen. And she saw this half human, half lizard in her basement of the antique shop. She thought it was a demon. I won't get into a lot of detail, but things happened. And I completely discount it wasn't something demonic. And there was an exorcism involved. And we recorded some things to this day I can't explain. So again, I'm not going to say it was a demon, but there was something really strange going on. And we identified something that had happened in Holly, Michigan over like 150 years ago that connected this woman with events that happened in Holly, Michigan way back then. So it kind of put the whole package together. So that was as close as I got to a demon.
Yeah, sometimes people they confuse an angry spirit with a demon, you know.
Yes, yes.
Well, I look at, these are dead people that you're dealing with. So if you were angry or mean in your life, I imagine you're going to be mean and angry when you're
angry. Absolutely. And here's the big error that a lot of investigators overlook. Is it always the soul, the energy, the consciousness of a once living person? Who's to say that we're not connecting with a consciousness in another dimension? Uh-huh. I've been researching quantum theory and string theory for many years, and they think there's as many as 11, 12 or more dimensions. It's a fascinating belief that a lot of, and I do actually. So, we have to keep our mind open to what it is that we're really communicating with.
Exactly. Do you believe knowing the history of the building you are investigating is important? I think I know that answer.
Yeah, I think you do too. And absolutely. That's what it's all about. Connecting the history to the haunting. Now, sometimes you can't, you just lose history to time. But a lot of the investigations or cases we worked at, if you work hard enough, you can find history that would connect something. Yeah.
Yeah, because I've had past guests on, mainly psychics, mediums. They don't want to know the history because they want to go into with a clean slate.
Yes.
And some investigators as well. I personally think that history plays a vital role in everything, the person and the building.
Absolutely. And sometimes I will do an investigation without researching the history. And if we record something, that's when I'll really dive in. Because when you're doing historical research, it's not an easy process. Right. It's not like you're investigating a well-known person where information is everywhere. And that's why when we record evidence that we consider valid, we'll spend weeks, months on research. It's all about that. Yeah.
Okay. So when you do investigate places that murder or as a criminal scene.
Yes.
Or a crime scene, do you get an eerie feeling that maybe you should bring in a psychic medium to help out?
A murder scene, I don't know that a psychic or medium would make a difference because I'm all about recording something. I have worked with many psychics and mediums. This is going to get some heat. I don't have a strong belief in most of them, not saying all of them, most of them really connecting with the other side. Not that they don't believe it, they absolutely do. But I've worked with some psychics and a couple very well known. And if I don't know the history of the place, they can't give me details. But the minute, so I don't know, And again, I know I'm getting heat for this, but
that's
I don't
okay. Everybody's entitled to their way.
Exactly. Yeah. And because they can't connect unless I understand the history, my concern is, are they reading my mind and thinking it's connecting to the other side, which is a gift if they can, you know, read what's going on in my head. But I don't know. I mean, most of our cases, and we have worked with a lot of psychics and mediums. Psychic predicts the future. Medium is dealing with spirit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's the recorded evidence that really makes the difference for me.
Do you believe that you can carry a spirit home with you or to another place?
Yes. Yeah. I think.
Or they can attach to you some way.
Yes. And it doesn't always have to be negative. The first investigation I mentioned earlier was the Whitney. And I believe David Whitney is connected to me. I mean, he was the first. His family and David were the first people I really researched the heck out of. And I got to feel like I knew him personally because of all the research. And he has come out and we've recorded his voice on a couple of investigations. And he's not, if he's with me, he's not a negative presence. Doesn't always have to be bad.
What type of tools do you use in an investigation?
Well, that's a good question. You know, there's a lot of them out there right now. I've used all of them almost, and I discount them or I say, yeah, they make sense. But primarily, the most important tool is an audio recorder, a video recorder. I mean, I've used Spirit Box. I've done, oh God, so many of the tools that are out there. But the one that seems to be most consistent for me is an audio recorder. And an EMF meter can be interesting. You know, I don't think an EMF meter going out because it's so flawed is validation of a paranormal event. But when the EMF meter starts responding to questions, that's when I start watching the video closer and listening to the audio more. And sometimes there is a match, but very often not. I still use it though.
Yeah, because I'm kind of old school. So, you know, when I was on my first investigation, it was basically just audio recorder, and I used a video camera with the infrared.
Yes,
and yeah. that seemed to work a lot. But you know, I see a lot of investigators now with the power grids on the wall and the.
Oh right,
now you get the little stick figures on your phone, and
I mean the whole thing with the stick figures. I can't remember what that is called, but
I can't either. I don't use it, but
it's a flawed gaming system. That some computer guy kind of regridded it, and it's looking for points, variations in the light grid, and it's programmed to make stick figures. Now, what makes anyone think, well, apparently many, but what makes people think that a spirit, which is energy, is going to be the shape of a person? It could be like a cloud. It could be in many different forms besides human form. I'm not big on that. And for those who are, you know, that's fine. That's what you do, but and it doesn't make sense to me.
I see you give your readers a three-dimensional experience with something called the Secret Room.
Yes.
What is that?
It's a website that we have developed, and each story has a code to get into the Secret Room, which is where they will find audio. When we talk about evidence we've recorded or the investigation, they can get into the Secret Room and see the audio or the video and ultimately decide for themselves. You know, I'm not here to tell you what's haunted or not. You make that decision, but you know, that's what it is.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Getting people involved in
that. It took a while to develop that, you know, but I wanted the book to be as honest as possible and for the reader to actually immerse themselves if they want to in what we did. Yeah.
You started out as a skeptic.
Yes.
What do you have to say to other skeptics out there that are saying this is all BS?
I say, I get it. I absolutely get it. A skeptic is someone who's never had a paranormal experience. And that can change your life tremendously.
That's exactly what I told you. I did a seminar a couple of years ago, and this gentleman showed up at the library for the seminar, and all he did was to come to cause trouble. Say
yes.
We're nonsense, it's BS, and we're making this stuff up. And I said the same thing that you just said, you know. That's fine. I hope you never do experience it because it's people who, you know, have never experienced cancer or Alzheimer's or paranormal. They have no idea. You know, they can say, oh, I'm sorry. They don't know.
They have no idea.
That's why I never question my guess. Come on, it's been abducted by aliens or I don't know.
We have to open our minds.
It's your story, you know.
Exactly.
And I personally, my first book's coming out here pretty soon, and it's after 50 some years of in the works. Yeah, it was based on growing up in a haunted house. So I know what I seen. I know what I felt. I know what I heard.
Yes.
My sister and others involved. So it wasn't just me.
Right.
I was a skeptic, you know, and up to I was 12 years old. Believed in ghost or boogeyman or any of that stuff.
That was me.
Yeah.
and it changes, but sometimes those skeptics are there just to be rude and disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And that is uncalled for. You know, I don't know what their problem is, but it's not my problem.
But I found out most of the people stayed to the very end were the ones who were on the fence. They really didn't.
Yes. Well, the minute you give them an EVP, then you've investigated, and most investigators know, most EVPs, electronic voice phenomena, are very quiet. They don't play well in a group. But I have a handful that are actually quite clear. And when they hear the voice and we can connect it to history, that opens their eyes a bit. We did an investigation in Bath, Michigan. And in 1927, May 18th, I believe it was, there was a school bombing. And this crazy guy named Andrew Kehoe, who was upset about taxing the schools, worked for the school. He was maintenance, and he blew the school up. Still stands as the worst school bombing in history. Anyway, we investigated the site and the cemetery where a lot of the children were buried. And I got a clear voice phenomena, the EVP, from this little girl. We asked her who her favorite teacher was, and she said, Mrs. Hart. And it was ridiculously clear. And then we did the history, and we found out her teacher the day of the bombing was Mrs. Hart.
Wow.
And when you get that kind of validation, it's pretty hard to say, no, there's no such thing as ghosts. And there were a couple of other, cases we worked on where something similar happened. So it is true. I mean, I have no question that there is something that exists out there, consciousness, that we are not generally able to communicate with, but is there.
You know, I've always said that the paranormal is the unexplained.
Yes.
But isn't it cool when you come across the question is answered that you had, that there it is.
Yeah. It's
just like you said with the voice of the girl, I always also said that, sometimes it's like fishing. You can go out and catch a whole bunch of fish and a bunch of EVPs, and sometimes you have like absolutely nothing. You'll sit there all night in the dark and
That's it. And people who don't investigate, they watch the paranormal shows, which is fine. They're entertaining, but they're not reality.
Right.
And exactly. Those of us who investigate will tell you exactly what you just said. You're sitting there for hours and nothing.
They don't connect with you, but maybe somebody else in the group or somebody else in that room.
Right. It's crazy. And then you're sitting there and it's 3 a.m. and you're about ready to just close your eyes and something happens. And when paranormal activity happens, it's not like building up to it. It happens. And now you're wide awake.
Right. When you were investigating, I think you said stuff for the, was it the Travel Channel or travel something and the guide in Michigan?
Yeah.
With your sister. Yes. Did you guys bounce things off each other? I mean, because I know it's the same way like in the paranormal investigations, you kind of bounce off. And I think it's important to have different people on your group that don't think the same way you do.
Absolutely. I mean, my sister and I did bounce things off of each other. We were both kind of skeptical. She was less skeptical than me. Mm-hmm. But, we worked with paranormal teams, and I did work with an exorcist who was a minister and mediums. So, I mean, I like to hear different perspective on investigations and the results of the investigation. And my mind is always open to something, but I have to feel it's logical that it makes some sense, so.
Do you believe you can move a spirit on to another realm?
Yes.
Some people don't use the term heaven or hell.
I'm one of those that don't believe in heaven or hell. I was raised a Catholic, so yeah, I know.
The Catholics have that thing called purgatory.
Sure.
Our church was a fire preacher.
Oh, sure.
And
yes.
You're going to go to hell, even talk about paranormal ghosts and demons, and you're going to go to, don't even talk about it, you're going to go to hell. Yeah. And that was just it, heaven, hell.
That's what religion teaches us, but I'm not sure that I believe there is a heaven or hell. I think there is another existence. And depending on what we do in our life, we move on to that existence and we learn new things. I also think when someone transitions, they don't come back. You know, I've heard many stories, as I'm sure you have, about, you know, I lost my aunt and she came to my, I didn't know that. And I woke up in the morning, she was at the foot of my bed. And I think that's possible. But for someone to come back to you again and again and again, again, it's just my thoughts based on my experience and research. I believe that they're stuck. If they stay with you, and it could be you that's sticking them, then, you know, you're needing them with you. But if you are able to transition, you don't come back. And why? You know, it doesn't matter. Your loved ones are fine. Whatever they go through in this existence, what you're going to is so much better that there's no need to come back. But some people need that so much. I think they bring them.
I had a friend of mine who had his brother passed away, and they haven't spoken in 20 years, moved apart in different states. Long story short, he got a phone call like 3 a.m. and it's his brother telling him, "I'm sorry. I just want to let you know I love you and I miss you. And take care." And he hung up. He says, "You know, that's cool. Now I got a relationship back with my brother." Then he gets another phone call. "We want to inform you that your brother passed away." You know, but he died like 10 hours before that phone call was made.
See, I think when you first pass, you have the ability to do that before your energy, your consciousness, your soul, whatever you want to call it, moves on. And in that period of time, I think that is possible to connect with people that you feel you need to. No, I believe that. And the other thing I believe, I've been studying something called continued consciousness. After, you know, the whole premise of haunting or whatever is that when we die, our consciousness continues in some form. So I've been trying to see if there's any scientific research that might validate that. And I'm beginning, I'm connected with a Dr. Samuel Parnia, who's director of cardiopulmonary resuscitation at NYU Langone. And he is like the king of continued consciousness studies. He's taken 2,000 people, and this is worldwide. Major university studies have revived 2,000 people over this period of time who had heart attacks. Some have been dead for several hours, and he identified a way to bring people back after a longer death. And he's not looking for ghosts, right? And what he found with these 2,000 people, 40% were able to provide qualifiable evidence of consciousness after they were in full clinical death for up to an hour or more. And 10% had near-death experiences, you know, the mystical kind of thing. And 2%, now that's not a lot, but 2% is a whole lot more than he thought he could have, he would ever get, is these 2% were able to provide conversations and detailed information of what happened over an hour after their death. So I believe there is continued consciousness, and that leads the way to communication.
I can relate to people who have moments where they're, that's happened to me more than one time, which is kind of leading to my next question, is do you feel that you have a guardian angel?
I don't know about a guardian angel. I used to. But sometimes I think if I did, I don't think they're with me anymore. You know, I don't think they love, like, no, I'm leaving this soul.
People name their guardian angels, or they have more than one. I believe I do, because in my book, I've survived that all how many times. And I believe that, and what happened last year coming home from a bad experience with my father who has Alzheimer's. And I'm like, I'm cursing out God. And then I was almost killed by another car. That should have been hit. I mean, there's no way that car should not have hit me. And I closed my eyes and turned the wheel. Like, I'm just praying. I hope my wife's okay after I'm going to get hit. He's going by 70 miles an hour. And somehow he's in the ditch. I'm okay. And I told my wife, says, I have to have, you know, and it's happened so many times. So I personally believe there is, but I don't know who mine is. I wish I did. Is it God? Is it?
Are you supposed to know your guardian angel? I mean, could it be a descendant, an ancient great-great-grandfather or something? Or is it a guardian angel, just an angel from heaven unrelated to you on earth?
Right. I mean, I wish I knew, but I don't. Yeah, I don't know. Some people do know. Have you ever come across a spirit that didn't know they were dead?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, there have been, first of all, paranormal activity, In the locations I've investigated, only about 10% of the time do I get valid evidence. And of that amount, I'm not sure there's any that made it clear to me they thought they were still alive. Even though when we communicate with them verbally, we will say, you know, you're dead. They've never said, you know, I'm still alive. So I don't know. That's a good question. How about you?
I haven't. No, I have not. Do you believe that a ghost can age? A spirit can age?
I don't think so, because when they pass away, you know, they kind of, again, who knows? I would believe anything, but my personal opinion is that when they pass away, their soul, their body passes away, they stay that age. Even though I have spoken to a variety of spiritualists who believe that when you pass on, your soul is at a certain age. And even if you're a child, when you transition to the other existence, you move to that age, a consistent age for all. So I'm open to that, and I don't know. But here on Earth, I mean, there have been locations I have investigated many times over a 10, 12, 15-year period. And I don't know that the few times we record something that it would suggest they have aged. And since I don't see them, I don't know. I don't know.
Right. What I'm going to do, I'm going to take a short break here and come back and we'll continue the conversation.
Do you hear that? Do you see that? There's more to what you see and hear in this shifted reality. I hear my guardian angel talking to me. This is Maria, and I have a guardian angel named Fija. Together, we will talk to you about the different shifted realities. Join us. You are listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast. Have a peaceful day.
Okay, I'm back with Kathleen. I had a couple more questions here.
Shoot.
Have you or your sister ever seen a ghost or an apparition?
Never have.
Excuse me. I know you got it with the EVPs and equipment.
Right.
Physically seeing a ghost or a spirit.
My sister thought she did at one point, but we had nothing to validate it. But I've never seen anything even close. And I've been into some pretty creepy places. So, but creepy doesn't mean haunted, as you probably know.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I've never seen anything I would consider an apparition or a ghost. Nothing creepy.
Yeah, like I never did either until like in my book, you know, the first day pulling up in the driveway, I seen her in a window.
Windows are tricky. There's something called pareidolia, and there are reflections on windows that can look like something. And I've disproven, I've debunked a lot of the window, seen it in the window things. Uh-huh. So I'm not saying yours was pareidolia, but it's always a question mark.
Which had me question it as well, because nobody else seen it, you know, but me.
Yes.
And it was 4 years later when we were moving out of the house. I seen her at the foot of my bed. So it was the same girl.
Okay.
This was an apparition. So
okay.
That was, and then leaving the house the next day, my family, I seen her in the window again, as it was the first day.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people say they've never seen a ghost, or some will say they see multiple ghosts.
Yeah. It's, you know, they probably have. I do think that our own consciousness is very unique to us. Sometimes the eyes see or look, but they don't see. And it's like you're in a car and you're stopped at a light and it turns green and you go, but there's a woman in a baby carriage, you know, taking her baby across the street. And it's like, I didn't see her. So it's possible, you know, that some people are more receptive to that than others. I personally have never seen one.
You know, we've had talked before, you know, about, you know, seeing is believing, and you have to experience it, you know, to believe it, you know.
Sure.
And and I think it was with my mother. I got so angry with her during that process. Was my father and my mother never seen anything in the 4 years we lived there, not one thing. So
yeah.
Actually, I was always making a thing up. I was always grounded for lying, exaggerating the truth. You know? But it was my sister, my brother, my two uncles, a friend that spent the night. So there's more than just me.
Right. It saw the apparition?
I don't know how to say it. You know, it's the spirit activity. You know, the pounding on the walls, somebody being thrown off the porch.
Oh.
Somebody being thrown out of the bathroom. It was very violent on a couple of them.
Mm-hmm,
my sister and I and my brother, we had nothing violent. Bond of the young girl I was connected with, you know. I even named her Alice.
Wow, okay.
But when we moved out of the house, the people that moved in after us, it was extremely violent. And then the house burned down in 2005. So I don't know. I'm doing research right now on the house itself.
Yes.
And I have to, and since it's hard to get research on a house that's burned down.
It is hard.
The records. Yeah. And yeah. So I'm going to the city hall. I'm going through the library. I'm going through old phone books, you know, because you can get a lot of information off of old phone book.
I don't know if you are a member of Ancestry, but you can, on the click of a button, find out all kinds of information about the history of a home by the address. So, and the owners, you know. So.
Uh-huh. That's the same thing with the old phone books. If you look in like 1964, you typed in your name, it'll come up what you did for a living, your husband did for a living, and so it's pretty cool. But then I take that name, then I can do research off that name.
Yes, on the name, yeah.
That's how I'm doing it. You know, I'm back to about 1925, I think, right now. Okay. And going on to the next question. I see you have the Haunted Travels of Michigan book series.
Right.
How many is in that series?
There's a trilogy, so there's three. I have a new book that came, well, it's not that new. It was released in 2019, I think, or 20. And it's called Stepping into Darkness. That's a little different than the Haunted Travels of Michigan trilogy. You're doing this. Have you seen?
That was my next question. You know, so the book that piqued my interest, my curiosity, was Stepping into Darkness. Yes. It's so surprising you said that, you know.
I have a closeness affinity that I have two stories. It's a compilation of things. I do have two investigations in that book, but it's a story of a variety of things. There's two personal stories about me, experiences I had, you know, related to tragic events, and one about when I was a college student in psych, I went to a psychiatric facility called Eloise, and I worked with a patient there who descended into a world of night terrors. So it's a true story. I just recount that. And then I have some historical stories about people with unexplainable gifts or powers, thoroughly researched, months of research. So it's an interesting compilation, but it's not part of the Haunted Travels trilogy.
Yeah. How many books have you written?
I've got two more that I'm working on. One, I'm at a dead standstill. And the other, it's not necessarily paranormal. It was going to be paranormal, but I found the history behind what I was writing was so incredible and more so than the evidence that we recorded, that I might just take that into another genre that I'm working on. So
yeah, my next question too, what are you working on?
Okay. Well, the one I'm really trying to, in the paranormal that I'm working on, is abandoned places, haunted spaces. And I'm having a hard time because there's a lot of abandoned places, but I can't get into them legally. Mm-hmm. And the ones I can get into legally have no history. So it's like I've got nothing to write about. And I won't go to a place unless I can get in there legally. That is posing more of a challenge than I thought. I for a period of, I think, 2 or 3 years, a team and I investigated a historic community in Michigan called Romeo. Romeo was established in the 1840s. It's got incredible here, weird history, and we investigated literally every building in the downtown area. And I could write a book on that right now, but I'm hung up on the abandoned places. And then the second one takes place in a little town called White Cloud, Michigan. And that's the one that's not necessarily paranormal, but it's about, you know, a backwoods community, turn of the century, 1920s, and a family that was absolutely tormented by the established town folks because they were the new people in town. And it is the last vigilante group in Michigan. And the terrible things they put this family through just need to be told. So I'm really focused on that one too. Anyway, I've got so many in my head. It's like...
Oh, that's another question. Like, where do you get your ideas at? What leads you to say a certain place? I mean, just comes to you? Okay.
It comes to my head. It's like, you know, that would be interesting if something that compels me or draws me.
Something, if somebody emailed you and said, hey, you should check this place out, or
Right. I mean, and you know, that's part of it. You know, some paranormal teams will say, hey, this is a great place. I think you do well in, with the book. I'll hang out with them. I love working with other teams. So, I mean, it just, it sort of is very fluid and it happens. And I just know. I just know.
Do you plan on any investigations in the future?
I'm always open to investigations, but you know, I've been on hundreds of investigations. Some of the most supposedly haunted places, blah, blah, blah. And great adventures. I'm not sure if I'm that into ghost hunting anymore. I'm always open for a ghost hunt, of course, an investigation. But, you know, so much of them, I've done it a million times. So, you know, I want something different and new to introduce to the people. I don't want to give them the same old, same old. Yes.
I was looking you up this morning and I was kind of confused because, you know, I thought that you're writing these on your own. Then I seen Beverly Rydell, you know, and I was like, I want to put her in there. So hopefully maybe we could have her on the show as well.
She passed away.
And I've seen that. I seen she passed away in 2015. And like, it's like, you know, I don't know why, but just got, you know, because you get kind of connected. Like, I know you and I don't.
Yeah.
And I just felt so bad. I was like, oh, my God, she. And I'm looking at her name in all these books and how close you were.
Oh, we were. Yes. Best friends from birth. Yes.
Then your husband.
Yeah.
So I know that her memories still have to be there.
Life can be joyful and life can be absolutely tragic. So, you know, you go with the flow. You do the best that you can and you keep moving forward. But yeah, within a few years, I lost my mother, my husband, and my sister. So yeah, that was, and we were all so close. So it was difficult, but you know, here I am.
Yeah. That's what I say. You know, life goes on. You got one foot in front of the other and
yes.
Yeah, you can mourn, you can remember and keep them in the heart and soul.
Absolutely.
But you always have to move on. You know, they would want you to do that. Anyway, I was looking at your books, you know, and do you like to go out and do like any type of book signings or do you like meeting the people that buy your books?
Buy my books.
Yeah.
Please, please buy them.
Right. Because I've been to a lot of different, so many book signings that you can sit there all day and one person shows up and you set all your table up and your books and you don't move anything. You know, it's better. I've had authors come on here, so they'd rather just sell it from social media, you know, Amazon or whatever.
Yeah.
I personally think even if I sat there for a few hours and if I talked to one person, it was meaningful.
It can be. I mean, I don't go to a bookstore and
you want to sell your books, right?
Right. I mean, what I do is I do speaking engagements around the Midwest, actually. And after that, I'll do the book signings. And I speak at conferences. So obviously, I do the presentation. And I love meeting people in the paranormal, like minds, you know. And I like hearing new theories and new methods or procedures and investigations. So I do book signings, but not at bookstores, because you're right. I mean, you don't mind sitting there for 3 or 4 or 5 hours. I can't stand it. I go nuts. Unless the bookstore, I did one book signing where I got a really good response, but most bookstores, they don't do much in the promotion part of it. You know, they don't let people know you're coming and then you're right. You get one, two, or three. I love watching these TV shows about writers and they do a presentation and, you know, the bookstore is full of people and they're lined up, you know?
Yeah. Do you do any type of like pre-book sales, anything like that online to build up to the sale?
Yeah, I have a publisher, an actual publisher that does my book. So I don't do pre-sales because I don't want to get into the mailing and distribution of books. That's pretty time consuming. I do sign books, you know, on special occasions and mail them out for like special birthdays or events, stuff like that. But generally, not really. I let my publisher do that. Here's an interesting theory. A lot of people I've talked to, not a lot, but there have been people I've talked to that said, every house I live in is haunted. I don't know what my luck is, but you know, every time I go, there's ghosts. And my belief is it's not the house that's haunted, it's you. And when you want to look at the history of something, look at yourself. Your very DNA is the history and mapping of your family. Who's to say that some of their energy and consciousness isn't attached to you? And you know, and as life progresses, we might pick up attachments that follow us because, you know, our energy is all very different, like a fingerprint. So it could be the energy around us is drawing these spirits to us.
Combined. Oh, yeah, because it's all energy, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's all energy. So absolutely. You couldn't run your equipment without the energy.
Yeah.
I personally feel I use my body as a tool.
People that call you and are fearful for what's going on in their house, you can't just go in there and say, yep, your house is haunted. See ya. You have to go in prepared to help them. And it's hard to help them unless you really understand what the haunting is about. And some people think you can sage a house and it's going to be clean. It doesn't work that way, from what I've been told. You know, you have to know what you're dealing with, and sage can just work it up even more.
So I would get stories from right. And back then there was no Google or.
It wasn't easy to do research.
So. I had to go just towns and city halls and.
Yep. Yeah,
do it that way, you know, or even my stories, you know, I had to go through newspapers, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Pittsburgh. So all around, I was from my area. So that's how I did it. And I know it's been so much easier now and today with the internet.
But it can still take months, you know, because records can be misspelled and they have wrong information. So there's a lot of cross-checking. And when you're dealing with an average person, especially in the time period you're talking about, there were so many abusive, horrible deaths and murders that just were not recorded by anybody. They might not even be on any ancestral record. So it's hard to track something like that down. I did an investigation like that and I couldn't get the history I needed. You know, it just was gone. Just gone.
One last question.
Yep.
Okay. What's your thoughts on the Ouija board?
To me, it's the same effect as a paranormal investigation. Anytime you call out to the spirits of the dead, you don't know what's going to come back. I don't think it's any worse than anything else. When I was a kid, I played with the Ouija board with my girlfriends and, you know, teenage stuff. And I never have had anything that I would think was a result of a Ouija thing. And I know a lot of people think it's calling out to the spirits, but anytime you are on an investigation, you're calling out to the spirits. To me, again, I think it's the same thing.
I just, when I started my documentary, I went to our church, our Catholic priest in our church. And I just thought, I brought it up to him, I was doing this, just want to see what his thoughts were on it.
Yes.
And he was so interested.
Really?
Telling me stories about what went on in the Vatican and underneath the Vatican. And
yes.
He had his own stories I listened to. And then he says, I don't have a problem with this, but beware, there's a fine line between an evil spirit and a demon.
Yes.
Bad spirit and a demon.
Yes.
You know, it's very easy to cross that line.
Yes.
Or leave a portal open.
Yes.
He says, that would be my only suggestion, and stay away from Ouija boards. And that was the last thing he said.
Stay away from the what?
Ouija board.
Oh, really? So he was, well, I mean, it's not a Christian device, that's for sure.
So I'm like, okay, I was just surprised he even talked to me about it, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, he was actually pretty open-minded about it.
I've had other people on here say it's just a game.
It's a game. It's, to me, that's what it is. It's a game. Even though it can get serious, I mean, I do believe it's our energy that draws spirit. So unintentionally, as we're whether we're teenagers or adults, and we're calling out to spirit, you could be drawing something to yourself, but you can do the same thing on an investigation.
I'm going to have you tell my listeners where they can go to get your books, get your links, whatever that's going to lead them to you.
Lead them. Come to me. Come. It's Haunted Travels of Michigan and Stepping into Darkness. There's four in the group, and you can find them at Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, a lot of major booksellers have the book. My website is hauntedtravelsmi.com. You'll see a lot of information. I've got some videos up there. You'll see where our secret rooms are located. And if you ever have any questions, I'm on Facebook. I've got a Haunted Travels of Michigan Facebook page. And of course, Kathleen Rydell Tetson Facebook page. So come to me.
Well, Kat, I'm going to put your links at the bottom of the episode. It's been my pleasure having you on the show.
And it's been fun to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen Rydell Tetson. Please go to the links at the bottom of this episode and check out Kathleen's books and also where you can contact her. And please go to Apple and rate and review Ghost in the Valley podcast. Thank you for stopping by. I'll see you in 2 weeks with another great show on Ghost in the Valley podcast.